Before we jump into the text this morning, a couple of announcements want to share and highlight. Our partnership with Slate Ridge Elementary is one that continues to find ourselves being asked by teachers, staff, and administration for various needs. I want to thank you all for your donations of deodorant bars and sticks. That's very helpful. We delivered those last week. Now is the time of year where classrooms run out of some essential supplies, namely disinfectant wipes. That's an item that is very important to the classrooms of small children who does this all the time and does that all the time, like I do. So we are collecting disinfectant wipes. If you are so inclined to share and to give to that effort, there will be a drop box in the back, and we're going to do that for about 2 weeks, and then we'll make a delivery to Slate Ridge Elementary of disinfectant wipes. Couple more announcements regarding food. Next Sunday, we are going to have a church potluck fellowship meal in our fellowship hall. So immediately following service, we'll give the benediction, say a prayer for the meal, and then proceed down the hall and to share a meal. So again, if you are so inclined to bring a dish to pass, make a lot. If you don't make something, it should be okay, because other people will make some things, and we'll have plenty of food and conversation to be had during that fellowship meal. And then the following Sunday, on Easter Sunday, we want to invite everyone to come share at 9 a.m. breakfast, pancake breakfast in the fellowship hall. Is going to be hosted by the shepherds, so please come and enjoy pancakes and syrup and sausages and maybe some grits. Can't have breakfast without some grits, savory or sweet. I know there's a debate out there. I do both. So anyway, we would love for you to come to that. We'll send out some correspondence this week, hopefully, as well as invitations to breakfast on the following week. We're going to be in the book of Luke, chapter 10, the end of Luke, chapter 10, today, starting at verse number 38. I'm going to read a small portion of Luke, chapter 10, in just a moment. There's a researcher from Harvard Business School, Adam Waits. He wrote an article entitled, "Beware of the Culture of Busyness." In his article, he reports the findings of research where the conductor of the research, she conducted a pretty simple research project where she would just ask people, how are you doing? And she reported from her research that 8 out of 10 people responded with this: "Man, I'm busy." Not with the man, I put the man on there, but "I'm busy." 8 out of 10 people responded with, not "I'm good," not "I'm bad," not "I'm okay." They responded with, I'm busy. Now, who am I talking to right now when I say there is so much always going on that you hardly know what to do or what happened to the time? How many of us wish that there were just a couple more extra hours in the day, you know, not 24/7, 26/7. If we just had a couple more hours, then we can get all the things that we need to get done during the day. We have work things to do. We have house projects to complete. We have children's things to do. We have so much to do, and we always feel or often feel like nothing ever gets done or completed. And then we go to bed and we lay in bed and we toss and turn thinking about all the things that we didn't get done and all the things we have to do the next day. We are busy. In this article, Waits says that the business and work community has made busyness a status symbol. If you're not busy, you're not producing. Our busyness is the fuel to our lack of enjoyment, lack of exercise, and poor diet and eating practices. That is, if busyness lets us eat at all. I don't know if you're a 80s movies fan, but the movie Wall Street with the finance Wall Street guy, Gordon Gekko, he has a line in that movie that says, "Lunch is for wimps." Our current sermon series is an exploration of the meal narratives found in the Gospel of Luke. We have been invited to dine with Jesus. So let us take our place at the table of Jesus as we come face to face with our own busyness. On the menu today, dining and mentorship. Dining and mentorship. The Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, starting at verse number 38. Now as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part. This will not be taken away from her." Not a long reading, a few verses. It's not a lot of action in the text. I just gave an introduction about busyness, and Jesus was busy for good reason. Jesus would only do his ministry on earth. It was only 3 years. He had so much to do packed in a small amount of time. So it stands the reason that he was busy. But Jesus' busyness is that which prompted him to spend a lot of time in prayer. This is what the author of Luke says about Jesus' busyness in Luke chapter 5, starting at verse number 15. It says, "But now more than ever, the word about Jesus spread abroad. Many crowds would gather to hear him and to be cured of their diseases. But he would withdraw to deserted places and pray." Do you see how Jesus dealt with busyness? Was to get alone. It was so much to do that he could not neglect time with his Father in prayer. Jesus got away to pray, and he often got away also to just dine with friends. And our previous meal encounters were meals with tax collectors and Pharisees. And all the four previous encounters, there was some conflict, some back and forth, and some uncomfortable conversations. One might not expect that at this meal with friends, that there would be these types of interactions. And while Jesus didn't blow a gasket as he did in some of his previous encounters at the Pharisees' houses, there was a moment of tension in this narrative. Tension. Mary and Martha. Now, Luke's gospel doesn't tell us a lot about these sisters. In the Gospel of John, these sisters were joined by their brother Lazarus, who Jesus raised from the dead. We don't have a lot of context to explore here. The details are minimum. Jesus is at the home of some friends for a meal. No reason to think that he will get into it with the Pharisees or find himself defending tax collectors. No, just a simple meal with friends. Now, Martha is described as the host, and as host, Martha is tasked with making preparations for dinner. No surprises here. Those of you who have people over for dinner know that there are things to be done. What's on the menu? Got to clean the house. We've got to get things together. Is John Hess still here? I don't see. Did he leave? John Hess. Where's John? Hey, dear John. I've had John over to the house before, and you remember what you told me what your favorite meal is? Yeah, pot roast. I made pot roast for him. And so let's say pot roast is on the menu. And when you're thinking about pot roast, you know, you've got to have your beef and you've got to have your vegetables, your carrots, your onions. I like to put mushrooms just for an extra added meatiness to my pot roast. I want to show you what I brought, and maybe even give you a window into me preparing my pot roast, so you can have this recipe. There's my salt and pepper. There are my carrots, and there's my onion, and there are my potatoes. Behind the scenes, I really prepared well for this sermon, y'all, and I went on Amazon. I said, you know, I don't want to handle real raw meat, so I need to buy like a fake piece of, you know, a big chunk, you know, like they do in the display cabinets. And so I bought one off of Amazon. So here's my advice to you. If you don't hear anything else from this sermon, make sure you look at the dimensions when you're buying, because this is the pot roast that they sent me. So pretend like this is a big honking piece of chuck roast, okay? All right, so I know John's coming over, and to make pot roast, it takes a lot of time, so a lot of the work to be done to prepare for John to come over, I do beforehand, so this would probably take several hours before, and the first thing I'm going to do is, you know, put my pot on the heat, and I'm going to season my hunking piece of pot roast, and the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to sear it, put a little oil in the pan, and sear it, and make it so, just imagine, you know, and I'm sealing, someone said, sealing in the juices, I guess, I don't know, and I'll take that out, and it's brown. Then what I need to do is, I got my sharp knife here, and I want to cut my carrots, cut off that top part, don't need that, and then just, you know, just some real nice chunks, because, you know, what's a pot roast without, like, real big chunks of vegetables, right? And so you want to chop your carrots, and then, you know, your potatoes, and nice big hunking chunks like so. I'm nice with this knife, y'all. It's really sharp. And so I'm just going some nice chunks here. We'll do that. And then the onion, you know, you want to slice in half like that and cut off that edge right there. And then you want to peel it off. We lost the carrot. We'll get it back. Won't put that in the pot. But then just some nice slices like that. And you know, you cut I cut my onions like nice and big because I like them to cook like that. So then that oil that you cooked your meat in, you want to take all those veggies and you got to imagine, y'all, you know, put all that in there. You know, it's sizzling and you know, you're putting your salt and pepper in there. And then what you want to do once that starts to get brown and the vegetables get soft, that's going to bother me. And vegetables get soft, you want to what they call deglaze the pan. Now you can use, some people use red wine. I use beef stock, and, you know, just pour that in there to deglaze that. Then you take your brown, big honking chunk of meat, and you set that right in there, and you cover, and you go, and you put that in the oven for about 3 hours. Then I take it out, and I baste it, and what have you, and then put it back in and let it cook, and then you take it out, and you have cooked pot roast. John, you need to listen, this wouldn't be an illustration if you didn't just join me. Could you join me for supper? Now, there's still things to do, and John may come over, and if you know me, if you've been over to the house, when I'm prepared, have a seat, my friend. If you're at my house for dinner, you know that I go absolutely berserk, and I'm sweating, and my wife is cleaning up, I'm cleaning up, I'm messing up the kitchen. She's rolling her eyes really hard right now because I'm a really, really messy cook. But there's still things to do. Even if John is there, I might have some appetizers and snacks, and so, you know, we've got to set the table. You know, with plates, and we don't always eat at the table. Sometimes we just get your food and eat wherever you can. Let's get you a fork. I forgot to put on my apron. There we go. Yep, this one is used. So I got my apron on. Now, while he's there, the last thing you have to do is make gravy. What's pot roast? Roast without gravy. So just pretend I'm making a gravy. I took some butter, some flour, and mixed it up, and I took some of the drippings from the pot roast. Let's see if this is still pretty hot. All right, let's see if y'all, look at that. See that? That's the final part. So we'll bring that here. No, I won't do that. This is me. This is me. I'm just so busy, got to get it all done. So what I'm going to do is dish some of this out here. How about that, huh? Well, John, you're going to have to eat some of this. You're hungry. The illustration won't go well if you don't eat it, brother. All right, let's take this. Let's take that little, this big pumpkin pot roast out. Put that there and put that there and all right. Then I'll come over here. I hope this doesn't ruin your lunch. I'll just give you a sample and then you can eat whatever you like. How about that? You can get some more if you want. Well, they cook down, you know. So, all right, I want to see how it tastes. Oh, wait. The gravy. Hey, this is me. Christy, isn't this me? This is real life, y'all. It's real life. So, let me stir that up and put it in the gravy bowl. And there you are. Fresh gravy. Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay, yo, have at it. Have at it, yeah. And you want to pray? Please. All right, dig in, John. You got to tell me how it tastes, man. You need anything? Salt, pepper? You good? Yeah. Okay, all right. Go ahead and eat. I have something to do. All right. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Christy will tell you that often when we invite people over to eat and I do all this for cooking, after cooking and being around food for so long, I usually have no appetite. And so what I do is I try to find other things to do. I'll clean up while you guys are eating and whatever. And there are times where my wife just has to simply say, Dion, please sit down, eat something, enjoy the company. There it is. That we get so carried away with task that we forget the moment. I mean, I love to have people over, and what pains me right now is that I'm not enjoying the moment eating with John. John, don't worry about them people looking at you. You eat that roast. Sometimes I need to be reminded that having people over for dinner, that the meal is part of the experience, but being with the people is probably the more important part of the experience. And herein lies the tension in this story in Luke. The story preserved to us in the Gospel of Luke is with the narrator telling us that Martha was distracted. Distracted by preparations and her many tasks. And not only that, she was also upset that her sister Mary wasn't helping, but she's just sitting down listening to Jesus. But Jesus said, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. And the word distracted here in the text is only used, I believe, in this text. And it's a word that also depicts being disturbed or rumbled, as in a riot. And so Jesus and Martha, why are you so disturbed? Church, let's pause for a minute. Because how many things in our lives are we just simply distracted by? And in the grand scheme of things, they're not even big things. They're little things, but they ache at us. They get at us. They burn at us. And we think by getting disturbed over it or rumbled by it, that it's going to help. And it normally doesn't help. It just gets us into a bad place mentally. spiritually because we're so disturbed. We put our hearts and minds at a terrible disadvantage of being positioned to be transformed by the very presence of God because we're so disturbed and distracted by some little things. The author and researcher that I referred to earlier discovered, based on research, that this quote, the more the brain is engaged in a specific task, even busy work, the less it can transcend the here and now. What this researcher discovered is what Jesus knew and revealed to Martha all along. That she was so distracted by being busy, she couldn't understand that there was this here and now where Jesus was in her home, and there was something transformative that could have taken place. So Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her. In the past, when I have preached on this sermon, it begins to beg the question, the differences between Martha and Mary. And I would probably ask the question, who in here is like Martha? You're the doers and the busy people and the agitators. And some of you will raise your hand. And then I would say, well, who are you or the Marys? Like, you're the dreamers. You're the ones that's always thinking and you're pensive. And then I would make the point that we need both Marys and Marthas. And I believe that, and that's true. But this text is not talking about that. This text is not drawing our minds to Mary and Martha's. Jesus is in the house, and Mary has chosen the better place. A seat at the foot of the rabbi who offers life-changing encounter, mission-fueled commands, and life-altering remedies. We want to walk on this earth and live on this earth, we better pay attention to Jesus. See, Jesus commends Mary for taking time to smell the roses, or pause and appreciate life's little wonders, or slow down and savor the simple joys, or embrace the beauty in everyday moments. Pause to admire the beauty that surrounds you. Stop and enjoy the small pleasures that life offers. As followers of Jesus, take time and make time to spend with Jesus so he can have time to alter or change your life. Remember, it was Jesus who offered this to his followers, this from the Message translation. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Are you tired of all the busyness and distraction? Jesus says, follow me. Come and get away with me, and you'll recover your life. Come with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. The way to learn to deal with our busyness, our hurriedness, and distractions is to get away with Jesus and be discipled. I like the word mentoring. It's a word that depicts the act of learning and that it is directly tied to community and other people. To be mentored is for a mentee to be closely tied to their mentor. And here Jesus recommends to Martha to be like Mary and choose a place of being mentored to enjoy what's better, being present with Jesus. I have referred a few times to this researcher who has extensive expertise in the area of busyness and its psychological impact. The remedy he suggests curbing the negative psychological impact is for leaders to model healthy boundaries and to create working environments where productivity is not solely measured with busyness. This is Harvard Business School. He's talking to Fortune 500 companies. But the same goes true for church, Christian. He notes famed UCLA basketball coach John Wooden, who said, "Never mistake activity for achievement." What's your takeaway from this meal experience, other than a recipe for pot roast? Perhaps this meal is a prompt for all of us. Pause. Stop. Take a break from all the distractions, disturbance, the hurry, all the things that's literally taking our breath away, because we're losing sleep, losing oxygen, losing rest. This is not an invitation to be lazy or to be idle. It's an invitation to be discipled or mentored by Jesus so that our breaths are more meaningful. I believe the story at Mary and Martha's house was an incredible setup for the story that immediately follows Luke 10, 38-42, the first chapter, or the 11th chapter of Luke, in the first verse, says he was praying in a certain place, and after he had finished, one of his disciples said to him, "Lord, teach us to pray, as John taught his disciples." He said to them, "When you pray, say, 'Father, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, give us each day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins. For we ourselves forgive everyone indebted to us. Do not bring us to the time of trial.'" Remember earlier I read that Jesus often withdrew to pray. I wonder if his disciples took note of that. I wonder if they also took note that Jesus was busy. And I wonder if they often, or if they took note that Jesus probably got disturbed and distracted by many things. And I wonder if they pieced together that when Jesus was overwhelmed with busyness, he went to pray. And maybe they found themselves just as busy. A couple chapters earlier, Jesus sent all of his disciples out on a mission to go out two by two. They were busy. They were preaching. They were healing. They were busy. And I wonder if they came to Jesus and said, "Jesus, you're a busy guy. We see when you get overwhelmed with business, you go to pray. So, Lord, teach us to pray." And Jesus then teaches them to do the very thing that he mentee. Now, Jesus could have responded with, "Guys, I'm too busy. I don't have time. You have to figure this out on your own." But Jesus chose the better. Responded with, "When you pray," which is not a if, it's when. No, it's an expectation that you are going to pray. So when you pray, "Father, heaven, hallowed be." He chose what was better. May this mealtime encounter provoke us to choose that which is better. In that regard, church, we need to be like Mary. It was Mary who John wrote about in John chapter 12 when Jesus returned to this village in Bethany. It was Mary, while Jesus was in the house, Jesus took a large bottle of expensive perfume. She anointed Jesus. There's only a couple reasons that you would anoint someone with such an expensive oil. And one, preparation for death, preparing a body to be buried. And I wonder if all those moments that Mary had sitting at the feet of Jesus, Mary was one of the few people who, when Jesus says, "Hey, I'm about to die," Mary is one of the few that actually believed Jesus and understood Jesus. You see, when we sit at the feet of Jesus, we afford ourselves an opportunity to understand God better and deeper, more intimate. When we get so busy that we have no time for Jesus, We walk around saying, I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't. But Mary understood. She anointed Jesus, preparing him for his darkest way. What do we gain from this mealtime experience? We need to be like Mary. Choose that which is better. May we not deprive ourselves of this depth of knowledge and understanding because we are too busy. Let us choose what is better. I love you, John. I hope you enjoy your meal. I wrote this sermon and prepared this sermon before hearing the news of your brother's death. But I hope that this brings you some comfort. It's comfort. Feel free to eat it all. Look at people and say, oh, I'm eating pot roast. Praise team makes their way to the stage, sing an invitation song. Here is another invitation for us to come and to sit at the feet of Jesus, to be changed, to be transformed, to come just as we are, to come. I was telling the kids in class today, the teens in class today, that my number one advice to you, no matter what you hear from me, is to enter into a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Do it, and don't think that you have to get everything right or become perfect before you come to Jesus. Let Jesus do the perfecting. Let Jesus do the getting your life right. You just come to Jesus just as you are. And may we be like Mary. Choose the better place. Relationship with Jesus, intimacy with Jesus, may it be life-changing. If there's any way that we can help you, serve you today, please come forward as we stand and sing the song.